Welcome to the show. I'm your coach, Elizabeth, and thanks so much for your patience with me while I took a little bit of a break. I felt that I had a little bit too much on my plate. And so unfortunately, the first thing that got a little bit demoted was the podcast, but I'm so excited to be back today. And I wanted to talk a little bit about not only what's going on with Caitlin Clark, and if you're unfamiliar with who she is the phenom out of Iowa, who recently got drafted for the WNBA, and all hell broke loose when everybody saw her salary, which is going to be stretched over 4 years, which is a little bit over $338,000. So that's over 4 years, which feels criminal, especially when it's compared to a lot of the rookie salaries for men, not only in the NBA, but the Major League Baseball League and all that stuff, right? So it's really this really glaring wage gap if you look at these two sports and if you look at the recipients of these salaries. So I thought, what are some ways that we could talk about that you could use to increase your salary this year? And what's really interesting is that only 20% of women hold board seats in the C-suite. And it's interesting and incredibly disappointing. And I had the benefit of writing a wonderful piece for Forbes on this thing called the golf gap. And 90% of Fortune 500 CEOs play golf, and only 60% of those are women. And I'm sorry, only 20% of those are women. And but of that 20%, 60% of those women play golf. And I'm not sure if you're somebody who enjoys playing golf, if you're a woman listening to this, or if this is mainly just kind of been the result of being forced into golf outings or feeling like you had to golf, because if not, you're going to miss out on key conversations. Maybe you weren't going to get to sit next to your boss or a buyer or somebody who's more high visibility and influential in your organization that could potentially turn into a mentor. So when I started really digging into this golf gap, it brought up a lot of other things, right? Like, where are some other places that we could shift our focus to, not only to learning to golf? Because if you ask me about it today, I still really have not even a love-hate relationship with golf. It's not all hate, but I just really don't like it that women are being forced to participate in a game that they might not enjoy and they may otherwise not have any desire to be a part of. I actually have a friend here in OC, and she works for a large Fortune 500 company, and they forced her to take golf lessons, and they provided them. And when I asked her if she had to take them, she was like, well, they're not forcing me, but they are, right? It's kind of like read between the lines. And she needed these lessons so bad that she was doing it at 10 o'clock at night after she was done putting her child to bed. They actually had a pro stay late and give her these lessons. And then she was doing them on the weekend as well. So it really wasn't like a leisure activity for her. It was something that she had to do in order to be groomed for the C-suite and to be able to be in these conversations with clients that were a lot of times done on the golf course. You know, that's where a lot of decisions are made. So should you learn how to golf? Ugh, I hate to say it, but yes. If you want to rise in the ranks, just statistically, it shows that you probably are going to need to golf at some point. What are some other things we can do? This is something that I coach clients on quite a bit. And the first tip is be more visible. So I can't tell you how many clients have come to me and they've said, you know, I had a performance review and everything is good, but my boss gave me the feedback that I need to be more visible. Like, what does that mean and how do I do it? Well, being more visible just means that people like recognize you and your name, and they can really quickly kind of spit out what it is you do and what your value is. So to be more visible, I like to say you should be walking the halls. So not everybody is back in an office. Some people are 100% remote. So we're going to talk about that. But if you do have the option to go into the office a couple of days a week, as much as it's a pain in the ass to commute and do all of that, I always recommend it to clients because they do need to see you literally walking the halls. Don't just go to your office and then create a little bunker in there and not leave all day. And I know you're probably saying, Elizabeth, I've got Zooms back to back. Okay, well, create a buffer in your schedule. And maybe you need to plan a couple weeks out, but you can have some focus blocks, or just go in your calendar and say you've got a different meeting. Like, the meeting police aren't going to come and say, oh, you had a whole hour where you didn't have a meeting. What do you mean? It was in your calendar. Like, they're not going to do that. So just block off time, say you're in other meetings, do whatever you have to do. And then during that time, get up, walk around, be that person who interrupts other people if you need to, right? But like, especially if you're in an office where there's a lot of windows, or there's glass, or there's cubicles, they will see you there. You need to have a physical presence if you can. Now, if you're somebody who works from home, another way to be more visible is to lead calls. Maybe there is a standing weekly call and you're just a participant. You're never a leader. Maybe sometimes you contribute. Maybe your boss hosts that call. Reach out to your boss and say, hey, can I take a swing at it? Can I host one of these calls? I'm sure they're going to say yes, because anybody who's had to host these calls is like waiting for somebody to come in and volunteer to do it, right? And maybe they have an agenda they want to go through, but if you can't host the call, at least make sure you're on the agenda. And this should be a written agenda with your name and your contribution, okay? That is being more visible even though you're working remote. Make yourself known on LinkedIn. This is great. Like, you guys should be writing. I know a lot of people cringe at the idea of writing an original article for LinkedIn and publishing it on LinkedIn, but you absolutely should be doing this. If you give a shit about your career, write articles on LinkedIn. If at the very least, and I'm not letting you off the hook from writing articles. And if you don't know how to write an article for LinkedIn, just Google how to write an article for LinkedIn. It's very easy. There's not even like a character minimum. So you could write, you know, a 400 word article, just some of your thoughts, make it relevant. And if you can't do that, at least go in and comment. Never just like somebody's post. It means nothing. When I see that in my feed too, like such and such liked this or celebrates this, I scroll right on by, because I'm like, why do I give a shit if they like this? I want them to leave a thoughtful comment. So that's another way that you can do it. And in your comment, you can tag the original poster. You could tag your boss. You could tag your company, something, but they just need to know that you have a pulse. They need to know that you're out there. You're not only being a little bit self-promotional, which I know makes everybody cringe, but you have to do it in business. And you're also making their company more visible. So another tip is to negotiate everything, right? So you're like, Elizabeth, how do I make more money? Well, at some point there will be a ceiling to the band that they have set for your salary within the organization, but there's all sorts of non-salary items. So if we want to use Caitlin Clark, and as an example of this, a lot of people said, even my husband was like, well, the WNBA just doesn't have money like the NBA does. So $338,000 for a four-year contract might not be that bad, because maybe the WNBA just doesn't have the budget, right? Maybe that team, the team Indiana that she went to, just literally can't pay her more than that. Okay, fine. But then she should get a cut of their merch, right? Maybe she should be a partial owner in the team. Like, there's always other things to negotiate, and you can drill this down to your experience at work too. Maybe it's extra PTO days. Maybe it's an increased car allowance. Maybe it's an extra 10 grand on your travel and expense budget so that you don't have to fly Southwest. Maybe you can do some Comfort Plus on Delta instead. Like, there are other things, and that's a quick Google as well. Like, what are some non-salary items? But most of the time they're going to be specific to your organization and can even be tailored down to your role. So if you're in sales, right, and you do travel, that's where you're going to ask for a higher T&E budget. If you're in the office and they want you there 5 days a week, you can try to negotiate 2 days work from home, you know, or early outs on Friday, you know, May through August, right? So summer Fridays, something like that. But get creative, because at some point they are going to say there's just no more money, and you have to find other things that you can ask for that make your life easier at work. The third tip is build your brand. So this kind of goes back to the first tip on being visible, but you really do need to be active on social media, and that can be LinkedIn. But I think you should be contributing to media outlets as well. So this is something that I tell clients. There is a site called Podbooker, P-O-D-B-O-O-K-E-R, and you can create a free profile there, which can be really kind of similar to your LinkedIn profile. But this is where you can get booked on podcasts. You guys, there's a million podcasts out there. And guess what? They always need guests. You don't have to be somebody who's written a book. You don't have to be somebody who has a gazillion followers or anything like that. You just need to know something really niche about your job, and then find the podcast that talks about that. And you can pitch yourself. But I'm saying, even if you do a Podbooker profile and you put in what it is you love to talk about, maybe it's HR, maybe it's launching you know, incubator brands, something like that. It can be something that is just really hyper specific to you, and list that as a talking point. And I bet somebody reaches out, as long as you have a good headshot as well. Somebody reaches out and they have you on their podcast. And then you take that and you turn it into a LinkedIn post and you tag your boss and you tag the company. Not only does it make it look good to your existing company, but it really helps you if you do decide to look for other opportunities someday. They're going to notice that you give a shit. You know, you're contributing to things. You're being really visibly out there and you're being a subject matter expert, right? So the fourth tip is come to your negotiations with data points. So this feels like a no-brainer, but I can't tell you how many times people don't really do this. They just come with this, you know, I should get this and I've been here a long time, so I deserve this. Or the worst is when they say, you know, I'm a single parent and so I really need this, or my kids go to private school and I can't pay for it. Like, at no point should they know anything about your personal life when it comes to your salary. It shouldn't have anything to do with your personal choices, because that is a you problem. That is not a they problem, right? This is not your boss or your company's job to fix your finances. So instead, come with hard metrics on why you deserve the raise. It's really great to go on some platforms like Glassdoor and salary.com to find out what your market value is. It's also really good to reach out to recruiters that you've worked with in the past and say, hey, I'm not looking right now, but I would love to know what the going rate is for somebody with my tenure in my role. And make sure that you ask about the city you live in too. That matters a lot. Somebody making $200,000 in Iowa versus somebody making $200,000 in LA are going to have very different lifestyles, right? The quality of life is going to change. So make sure that it's relative to where you live. My fifth tip is to get paid for the job you're currently doing. And you're probably like, duh, but I can't tell you how many times clients have come to me and they've been up for a promotion and their boss says, well, why don't you just go ahead and start that VP job now? And then in 6 months, we'll evaluate whether or not you're doing well. And then that's when we'll give you the title and the salary adjustment. You guys, this is a big fuck no. Like, do not do work that you're not getting paid for. If they're going to adjust your scope of work, then your title and your salary needs to be adjusted accordingly at that time. It's not something that you're going to do for a few months, see how you do, and then retroactively, they're going to review it. Because guess what? They're not. And if anything, they're going to say, okay, well now, yep, you've earned it. Now we're going to start paying you that. Well, you just busted your ass for 6 months doing a higher level job that you never got a dime for. So I always say, never accept an increase in scope of work without getting the money first. You really should say, yep, absolutely. I'm happy to take on more work, or I'm happy to be the acting CEO or whatever the job is, but I'm going to need that money for that job. Now, that's only fair, right? This is when you drop the F-bomb on them, right? That seems fair. Because it's really not fair for you to be doing a job with a larger scope and you're not getting any sort of financial adjustment for that. So those are my tips on how to start the negotiations now, how to get more money now. Caitlin Clark, we love you. I really hope that she gets some sick endorsement deals to make up for the lack of salary that she's getting in her rookie year. I'm sure she will. She's a smart girl. But for all of us, I think that we can take pause when we see stuff like that. The wage gap is very real. And there are a handful of things that we can do today to at least set ourselves up to be a little bit more prepared when we actually do have to sit down and have those conversations and have the hard talks and ask for more money. And I always say too, have some lines in the sand. If your boss just keeps increasing work, I think you need to get real with yourself and say, okay, if they do this, if they add whatever, another project without paying me for it, I'm quitting. Like, you need to have some, you know, proverbial break glass in case of emergency moments. Like, at what point are you going to leave? Because I also work with people who haven't established those, even with themselves. And it's like, yeah, if they take away my car allowance, I'm probably going to stay. Or yeah, you know, if they take away this role that they said I could backfill, then I might stay. It's like, no, dude, get real clear with yourself. If they don't let me backfill this person, I'm leaving. If they take away this, I'm leaving. And you don't have to say it to them, but you should have some triggers within yourself where you know that if they cross this line, I'm leaving, because you are of value. And if you do these things I just talked about, your value, your visibility, all of that not only grows within your organization, but you become much more attractive to competitors who might want to steal you and have you come work for them. So I hope that was helpful. I'm so excited to be back talking to you guys. We've got great guests coming up. So I really look forward to sharing all of those episodes with you. And if you have any feedback, I always love it, or any episode ideas, be sure to share it.